Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It is the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Tumultuous week it has been indeed, beginning with a coup attempt, I suppose you'd call it, in Venezuela, and ending with, well, almost all-out war between Israel and the so-called Palestinians, the terrorists in the Gaza Strip. I guess we'll go to those stories first. I've got a headline from Reuters. Gaza-Israel hostilities flare with rocket attacks, airstrikes. First sentence. Gaza militants fired dozens of rockets into Israel on Saturday, drawing a wave of Israeli airstrikes that killed a Palestinian baby. And you can stop right there. So Reuters wanted to make sure they got that dead Palestinian baby in the very first sentence. Now, if you go on to read the article, you see that once again, it was the Islamic terrorists who started the whole thing by sniper shot two Israeli soldiers. Shot and wounded two Israeli soldiers. So what did Israel do? It killed them with a rocket. And then the terrorist launched, so far as we go to air, about 200 rockets into Israel. And but they got that dead baby in sentence number one, so everyone's aware that the Jews are killing babies over there is the point. All right. Yeah, why should they care? They kill babies all the time. Yeah, they're killing babies every day. But they did want to get that dead Palestinian baby into sentence number one because that's the way the world is. That they hate anything that has to do with anything that reminds them that there is a living God, and that's what the Jews remind everybody of. So that offends people by its nature. Now we'll go from Israel. I was in a professional situation earlier this week, and I had to ask a lady what her ethnicity is, all right? So anyway, in my work, sometimes I have to do that. It's not that I'm a racist or anything. It's just that sometimes you need to know that kind of stuff. So she said, I'm Middle Eastern. I said, oh, you look Lebanese. She said, no, I'm Palestinian. At which point I wanted to say, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. Are you Lebanese? Are you Syrian? Are you Jordanian? Are you Egyptian? What are you? But I didn't say that because I want to start having that whole argument. Anyway, why would you even say I'm a Palestinian? That's like, anyway, You'd think that's something you wouldn't even want to get out. But, whatever. But by the way, there's no such thing as a Palestinian, just so you know. Most people don't know that. I mean, this young lady's been convinced that she is one, and they don't even exist. All right. But let's go from there on down to Venezuela in the bad religion file. Yes, the bad religion file, the religion in this case being democracy. Yes, from National Review, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said last Tuesday that the U.S. supports Operación Libertad, a new movement by Venezuela's civilian opposition to overthrow President Nicolas Maduro. Yes, interim President Juan Guaido announced the start of Operación Libertad, and Pompeo says the government fully supports the Venezuelan people, and then he says democracy cannot be defeated as they organize riots in the streets. That doesn't seem democratic. But then again, democracy, why should we worship democracy? Why do these people worship democracy? Anyway, so the U.S. government, the American government, currently recognizes Juan Guaido as Venezuela's rightful head. So why stir up the people to go riot in the streets and get run over by tanks? Why not coordinate an invasion along with neighboring countries and put Juan Guaido in a military uniform, put a rifle in his hand, and put him at the front and send him out there to take his country? That's what we should do. You shouldn't be relying on civilians to go up against tanks, for crying out loud. That's just not right. John Bolton said in a tweet, Venezuela's military has a choice. Embrace democracy, protect civilians and members. All right. Does John Bolton remember, has he forgotten that it was a democratic election that brought Hugo Chavez to power in 1998? Has that been lost on all the geniuses in Washington? It was democracy that got Venezuela where they are right now. Because Hugo Chavez came out and promised all the poor people who'd been robbed blind by the previous government that he was going to give them all the rich people's money. And so he won a democratic election. Democracy brought the socialists to power in Venezuela. And if something doesn't change soon, they will bring the socialists to power here eventually. Anyway. For all you left-leaning enemies of mine, if you want to know what Russian meddling looks like, look at Venezuela right now. That's what Russian meddling looks like. And for all of you Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Bernie Sanders fans, although we probably don't have too many of those listening to this show, unless they're masochists. If you want to know what socialism looks like, look at Venezuela right now. A fine example of both socialism and Russian meddling, sitting right there in our own hemisphere, apparently not visible clearly to a majority of people in the government and at the top echelons of our society here. It's just embarrassing, democracy. Let's go riot in the streets and overthrow the president while we talk about democracy. All right. I've got nothing against overthrowing Nicolas Maduro. But just quit with the democracy talk, okay? It's not democracy that's going to get rid of Nicolas Maduro. All right. Meanwhile, we come back here in the war file. Najibullah Zazi is about to be released from prison on time served. You guys remember Najibullah Zazi? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. Do you remember Najibullah Zazi? I remember him because he was a... He worked at the Denver International Airport for a short time. That was before he started plotting to bomb the New York City subways back in 2009. Him and a bunch of other would-be terrorists were hatching a plot to bomb the subways in New York, and they were getting some sort of support from Al-Qaeda, and he got arrested. Him and all his cohorts were all arrested. And apparently they're going to let him out of jail because he turns out he's a nice guy. His mom called, and she said, you know, Najibullah, he's actually okay. They say that he has... the reason they're going to let him go is because of his good behavior behind bars and extensive cooperation I can't understand what he cooperated in. Apparently... he talked to the government over 100 times. He gave them 100 interviews and testified against one of his co-conspirators. So this guy should be put to death. How do you let this guy go? He was going to bomb the subways in New York on September 11th, 2009, I think was their plan. Anyway, he came to the United States in 1999, by the way, as a 14-year-old refugee from Pakistan. Destitute and pathetic, and he came here and he lived like a king. All right. His release will be cloaked in secrecy, and he'll spend the rest of his life living under federal protection. How's that for a turnabout? Can you believe that? By the way, his co-conspirators that he testified against, they were freed last December. So they let all these guys go. So I can't even comprehend that. You're going to plot to blow up the subway and then we're going to let you go? No. But that's where we are. Because I think that an awful lot of people in the government are either actually insane or on mind-altering drugs. That's the only thing that can explain letting these guys go is mind-altering drugs. Because there's no way that we have actual traitors in the government. They're not doing this out of trying to help Al-Qaeda. They're doing this out of ignorance and stupidity. Or possibly a drug-induced haze. That's possible. All right. Now, meanwhile, we go to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, where the Muslim American Society Islamic Center in Philadelphia posted a heartwarming video celebrating Ummah Day. Ummah Day. Yeah. Ummah Day. That's two words, by the way. Ummah, U-M-M-A-H, and Day. And if I'm not mistaken, Ummah is what they call Jerusalem, I do believe. The heartwarming video featured young children wearing Palestinian scarves, singing and reading poetry about Allah. One of the heartwarming poems said, "The land of the Prophet Muhammad's night journey is calling. Our Palestine must return to us. We will chop off their heads and we will liberate Al-Aqsa." That's okay. Heartwarming. By the way, the Muslim American Society website says that its mission is to move people to strive for God consciousness, liberty and justice, to convey Islam with utmost clarity, and that its vision is a virtuous and just American society. Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly have met their goal of conveying Islam with utmost clarity by having 11-year-old girls chanting about chopping people's heads off. That's clear to me anyway. But this part here, their vision is a virtuous and just American society. Now, what they mean by that is an America governed by Sharia law. And the thing that you don't want to forget here is that our society has become so vile and filthy and corrupt and sexually immoral that we actually give the Muslims a good reason to call us unvirtuous, that we've given them that because we're so vile and filthy and perverted with the queers falling out all over the place and the trannies and all of that and the pornography. We've given the Islamists an argument against us, a legitimate point against us. So I envision a virtuous and just American society as well. I do not include Sharia law in that. By the way, the Muslim American Society, where the teenagers were chanting about chopping off their heads, they have 42 chapters in the United States. That's almost one in every state. Okay. And so they're, you can see their video, I suppose, on see their video on Facebook there. Okay. So we let the terrorists go. We got the teenage Muslims chanting, "We'll chop off their heads," there in Jerusalem. And meanwhile, in the war file, we go to Burkina Faso. Oh, can I even pronounce this? Burkina Faso, hello. Which is in Africa. A gunman killed four worshipers and a pastor in an attack on a church in Burkina Faso, a nation in West Africa. Former colonial ruler France has deployed 4,500 troops in Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, and Chad. What is their mission of the French troops? To flush out jihadist groups. That's what the spokesman for the French military expedition there, to flush out jihadist groups. Okay. Not destroy, not kill, not dispatch, put an end to, not go to war with. Not achieve victory over, but to flush them out. To flush them out, I guess they can run into a Christian church and shoot people once they're flushed out. I don't understand the French. Total of 350 people have been killed in Burkina Faso since 2015. Two Fridays ago, jihadists attacked a village, killing five teachers and a municipal worker at a school. And around 4.3 million people have been driven from their homes. Over a million in the past year. Driven out from their homes by the practitioners of the religion of peace. The religion of peace causes 3.5 million people to flee. I'm sorry, 4.5 million to flee. It doesn't sound peaceful. That's the war file there. Meanwhile, we go to, so that we've just talked about Muslims chopping people's heads off. We talked about Muslims, well, singing about chopping people's heads off. We talked about Muslim jihadists shooting up Christian churches, terrorists being released for who can tell why. I can't even imagine why. And of course, the Islamists launching rockets in Israel. But when it comes to chopping off heads, there is a danger that's closer to home. And it is, let me just read the story from the New York Post. Matthew Borges, 15 years old, killed Lawrence High School sophomore Lee Manuel Valerio Paulino in a jealous rage after accusing him of sleeping with his girlfriend and causing them to split up. So here we have a 15-year-old teenage boy who was fornicating with a teenage girl, and then this other guy started fornicating with her, and the first one got upset and killed the other. Surveillance video shows the two teens walking toward the river where the decapitated body of the victim was later found. The defendant told his friends that he stabbed Lee Manuel to death and cut his head and hands off so he couldn't be identified. So what poses a bigger threat in day-to-day life to the average teenager? Is it the Islamists or is it sexual immorality? Well, the Muslims we just talked about, they were singing about chopping people's heads off. But the fornicator here, he actually chopped someone's head off. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for hanging through that with us, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's good to have everyone aboard. Now that everybody's comfortably in their seats, we can move on. So we went from terrorists to fornicators and all the dangers associated with that. And now we go to the dangers associated with Netflix. Netflix, I said, yes. Reuters, the same article, the same wire service that made sure to get a dead Palestinian baby into the very first sentence of their report on the hostilities there in Israel. Reuters from Los Angeles says the following with a straight face. Okay, suicides by young Americans rose by nearly a third in the month following the 2017 debut of a popular Netflix television drama, 13 Reasons Why. 13 Reasons Why is the name of the show, and it's about a teenage girl who kills herself. And since that show came out, since that show has been extant, there's been noticeable spikes in teenage suicide. Researchers say they could not make a direct causal link between 13 Reasons Why and the increase in suicide rates that was measurable and statistically significant right after the debut of that show. So the last thing we want to do is say that glorifying and normalizing suicide could ever increase suicide rates. We just can't tell. A Netflix spokesman says, well, suicide is a critically important topic, and we have worked hard to handle this sensitive issue responsibly. That's what he actually said. He said that with a straight face. Right after the researchers said with a straight face that the show about suicide cannot be causally linked to the increased suicides that were measurable and statistically significant. All right. Netflix chief executive, who I thought we just had. Oh, that was the next Netflix spokesman who said we've handled this. It's critically important topic. Really? Is suicide a critically important topic to be bringing up to young kids? Is that critically important? that we introduce subject matter like this in a normalized fashion? Why is that critically important, Mr. Netflix spokesman? But furthermore, let's go to the chief executive, Reed Hastings. He says 13 Reasons Why has been enormously popular and successful. It's engaging. It's controversial. But nobody has to watch it. Nobody has to watch it. What a lowlife. So he basically said, look, it's making me an enormous amount of money. It's making me popular and successful. And nobody has to watch it. Well, Reed obviously doesn't recall high school. Do you recall high school, Reed, when you were the one kid who wasn't watching the Hip In series? Do you remember that, Reed? Technically, you could say nobody has to watch it. But in teenage circles, you have to watch it, effectively. Or you're a geek. If you're not watching what's hip and cool, you're a loser. So, effectively, you do have to watch it, Reed. Anyway, I'm going to just put that aside. Netflix, the entire executive management team at Netflix should be arrested. Their doors should be kicked in at 4 in the morning, and they should be drug out of bed and handcuffed and thrown into vans and taken off for trial, is what they should, for normalizing and glorifying suicide. All right. Speaking of suicide, let's go to the death penalty file. The family of a man named Blake Alvey has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Jerry Springer and NBC. Yes, Mr. Alvey was confronted on Jerry Springer's show by his fiancée, Cassie Rutter. And here's what her and Jerry Springer did to this fellow. They basically ambushed him with the news that she had, number one, been unfaithful to him with his best friend. She no longer wanted to marry him, and that she had sold the engagement ring he had given her. And the whole time, Jerry Springer's filming the look on this poor guy's face, right? And just basically exploiting this, probably the most painful thing that this gentleman had ever experienced. Anyway. So about 10 days after the show aired, Blake Alvey committed suicide. He shot himself to death on June 3rd of last year. So... Well, apparently NBC, I didn't know Jerry Springer was still on the air.
Yeah, I didn't know.
But, you know, you can never underestimate the lowbrow taste of the American public and their desire to view people who are bigger losers than them. That's one of the reasons Jerry Springer survived for 27 seasons is because losers could sit home and watch people who were bigger losers than them and then fantasize that they're not losers. Anyway, apparently NBC announced last June that they would be canceling Jerry Springer after 27 seasons of this trash on the air. Can you believe it? Apparently his ratings were falling, probably due to the popularity of Netflix. Anyway, the lawsuit on behalf of this man who Jerry Springer and NBC helped to kill, frankly. The lawsuit accuses Jerry Springer's show of reckless disregard for the lives and safety of others. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But I don't think this should be a civil trial. I think this should be a criminal trial. And if everything that's happened here is true, and it all came out in a criminal trial... Well, Jerry Springer and NBC executives should get one more show on the air live, and that would be their execution. That should be their final, his last hurrah, because I think execution should be broadcast live, and not at midnight or no, like prime time, 7 p.m. On the East Coast. Yes, all right. Now we go from that down deep into the science. Really? File? Where this comes out of the subfolder, you've got to be kidding me, file, in the science room. We got an article here by Buzz Aldrin. You guys remember Buzz Aldrin? It's from a website called GreenwichTime.com. where Buzz Aldrin writes the following. He says, last month, Vice President Mike Pence announced that we are headed back to the moon. I am with him, says Buzz. It is high time we return to the moon. But, he says, Mars is waiting to be discovered. And I'm okay with that, Buzz. I'm all with you. I think we should send a guy to Mars. Yeah. He says, but he goes on, he says, the United States should focus on opening the door in our time to the great migration of humankind to Mars. This Buzz Aldrin was smart enough to become an astronaut. This guy walked on the moon, okay? This is not a dumb guy. But, Buzz, having been to the moon, do you recall that there is no atmosphere on the moon? Do you remember the big bulky suit you had to wear and that you were attached to a capsule by a hose that gave you air or you would die? Buzz, do you not? There's no air on Mars, Buzz. Somebody needs to get with Buzz and remind him that Mars is very similar to the moon in that it's not really conducive to human life in any way whatsoever. Anyway, Buzz could be getting he could be a half a bubble off at this point. You know, you get older. Your mind begins to wander, and Buzz might be in a bit of a fog here. But why would Buzz Aldrin even think that there's going to be this great migration of humankind to Mars? How could a guy as smart as Buzz Aldrin buy into something so ridiculous? So what I think Buzz Aldrin has been convinced of is that we are going to destroy the ecosystem on Earth, and of course, the natural solution is to go somewhere with no existing ecosystem at all and no air. That's obvious. It should be obvious to you people. The place we would want to go would be the place that's freezing cold and has no atmosphere and no air. Isn't that? Now, I never made it through university, I must admit, but I think Buzz did. I think Buzz did go to university. But Buzz, hey, buddy, maybe Buzz needs to be sent off for a checkup. That's, you remember, yeah, the old checkup from the neck up is what Buzz needs. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, back on Earth. I know, I'm going to miss out on the mass migration to Mars, because I'm not going. I'm going to stay where there's air, thank you very much. Yeah, I know, it could get smoggy, temperature could rise, the sea levels might come up a bit, but I like air. I think it's good. All right, now we'll delve deeper into the science... Really? File. As we go and talk about Unbiodiversity Conference. Yes, there was a big Unbiodiversity Conference. And they have hatched a plan to rescue nature. That's Buzz. Wait, get Buzz back over here. We've got an Unbiodiversity Plan, Buzz. We're going to rescue nature. Diplomats, this is according to the French press agency. Diplomats from 130 nations gathered in Paris last week to eat a lot of expensive food, stay in very expensive hotels, drink expensive wine and champagne, and validate a grim unassessment of the state of nature and lay the groundwork for a rescue plan for life on Earth. And they were going to hatch a plan to save all the life on Mars until they remembered there's no atmosphere on Mars and there is no life on Mars. No, they're going to focus on rescuing Earth. From who? They're going to rescue Earth from, you and me. That's right. The consumers. We're up out here consuming. Anyway, it was a five-day plan. It was a five-day meeting in which they hatched a plan. Really? To rescue all of nature? You did that in 5 days? I mean, it took God 6 days to make it. You're going to hatch a plan to rescue it in 5 days? I don't know about all that. All right, that's probably all their expense accounts would cover, see? Once the champagne stops flowing and you can't get free lobster anymore, you just say, okay, put a fork in it. We're done. We've saved nature. We all got to go home now because I can't actually afford to stay here at this hotel. All right. It's a 44-page draft that they wrote in that 5 days in between parties and champagne and lobster and what else do they have over there in France? Truffles, a lot of truffles. There was an enormous amount of truffles consumed. So they didn't seem to care about rescuing the truffles or the lobster. But they're going to rescue all of nature. Okay. The 44-page draft says, quote, "We have a closing window of opportunity to act and narrowing options." Oh. And they go on to catalog the, quote, 1,001 ways in which our species has plundered the planet and damaged its capacity to renew the resources upon which we depend. Now, wait a second. Aren't we the problem? Why are you trying to rescue nature for us? Aren't we the ones destroying it? Wouldn't it be better if we all died? This seems a bit schizophrenic. As you're sitting there stuffing your face with lobster in the evening and talking about how we're the problem, but we're going to save nature for us. It's just weird. They say the impact of humanity's expanding footprint and appetites has been devastating as they ordered the fourth course. That was between the fourth and fifth course when they brought up the whole appetites thing. Up to 1 million species, they say, face extinction, many within a decade or two. Oh, that's terrifying. And 3/4 of the Earth's land surface has been severely altered. 3/4 of the Earth's... We don't have enough bulldozers to severely alter 3/4 of the Earth's land surface, people. Have you ever been in an airplane and flown anywhere? And when you look on a clear day, when you look down from the airplane, there's almost nothing everywhere. Almost nothing everywhere. Okay. All right. Let's see. A third of ocean fish stocks are in decline. Uh-huh. And the rest are harvested at the very edge of sustainability. It's horrible. I think they said that was typed right in between the salmon and the Dover sole, course 3 and 4, I think. I wonder, are they counting the fish in the million species, or is this a separate, or they just break it out to make it more terrifying? They say a dramatic die-off in pollinating insects, especially bees, threatens essential crops valued at $500 billion. And dollars? Who can think of dollars at a time like this? You're not supposed to be thinking about dollars. This is about trying to save the planet. Dollars are the problem. Dollars are what are buying all those steaks and all that Dover sole. All right. They have 20 10-year targets that they've that were adopted in 2010 under the Unbiodiversity Treaty. And those 10, well, none of them have been met at all in any way, which is probably why they had to have this emergency meeting. You know, they say, hey, in 2010, we all got together. Remember the steak and the lobsters and the champagne and the prostitutes? And we made all these. Nothing's happening. Let's do it again. Let's have another meeting. So they did that, and they basically said, what we did in 2010 has been a total failure, utterly failing. So let's tack this onto the old expense report, and we'll get back to you. We'll circle back in 10 more years. All right. The Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Wow. So you know you're working for a bureaucracy when people ask you where you work, and you have to say, I work at the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Man, you'd think that they call it IPBES. 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 It doesn't even have a good acronym. Is that what that is? An acronym? I can't remember. When you use the first letter of every word? Well, you people had to look me up on that. Help me out. I don't know. IPBES. That's not even a good whatever that is. I believe it's an acronym. But I could be wrong. Okay, so they released this document. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the 44-page draft will be, it'll be processed a little further by the IPBES bureaucracy there. And then they're going to release it, on Monday, May 6th, at which time we can all breathe a sigh of relief knowing that the plan to save nature has been duly published. Let's see here. Listen to this. They say an area of tropical forest five times the size of England has been destroyed since 2014. And they just say that as if nobody's going to check that. I mean, that's simply not possible. We don't have enough bulldozers and manpower to bulldoze five landmasses the size of England. I'm sorry. We can't do it in 4 years. It can't be done. If everyone on Earth was put into a bulldozer and started scraping the land, it's quite possible we could pull that off in 4 years. But they just say it because nobody checks them on this stuff. They say that this a landmass, the tropical forest five times the size of England that we've all destroyed since 2014, mainly for beef, biofuels, soybeans, and palm oil. Well, I thought biofuels were good. And soybeans, I thought all the hippies, that's all they ate was soybeans and palm oil. Well, I know they hate beef. But now they're upset about biofuels, soybeans, and palm oil. All right, so I mean everything the earth is going to the world is going to end in 12 years as we've heard from people far smarter than us. But thankfully there are some people at the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services who are working on a plan to save us from ourselves. And that goes back to the bottom of the pile in the science, really, file. Okay. From there, oh, now this is a good story. Here's a heartwarming story for you. It's the story of two local teenagers in Florida who skipped school on senior skip day. And instead, they went swimming in the ocean off the coast of Florida. So that I don't know if it was a boy and a girl or a girl and a girl or a boy and a boy. I don't know who it was. They don't say in the article because it's probably politically incorrect to identify anyone as a boy or a girl anymore because you could end up getting sued. So they just leave that aside. They're just two local teens. Let's see. They decided to swim offshore in Volano Beach, Florida, but they became stranded 2 miles off the coastline for 2 hours. And they started to worry that they might not make it. And they became weak. And they were holding each other up as much as they could. And they began to pray to God for a savior. Yes. Now, I am not clear on why these two teens became stranded 2 miles off the coastline. That is not made clear. But it seems that they were treading water. Because they thought they were going to sink. So they began to pray. And they prayed a lot. And their prayers were answered in the form of a boat. Yes, a boat who Action News Jacksonville calls a godsend. How about that? You get it? Because they were praying. So it was a godsend. Well, the name of the boat was the Amen. That was the name of the boat, the Amen, right? And so one of the kids says, the first words that came out of my mouth were, God is real. Yes, the men in the boat pulled the teenagers aboard, got them safely to shore, and now the teenagers are thanking God and the men who saved them. One of the men on the boat said, there's no other reason, no other explanation in the world other than God. And some people are calling this a miracle, even. Some people have said it was a miraculous rescue. Yes. But I beg to differ. I do not think this was miraculous. I don't even think it's really all that remarkable because biblical phrases and Christian turns of a phrase and words and associated context that relate to the Bible and God, they so permeate our society that if you stop to think about it, if you actually studied it, You'd be surprised at how many phrases and terms there are in your everyday language that are associated with God and the Bible and Christianity. That just permeates our society. And so I would posit that it was a statistical certainty that a boat named something biblical would rescue someone, and I would posit that I'll bet it's happened at least 100 times in the past 2,000 years. That's my guess. And keep this in mind. Who is stranded at sea who is not praying? They're all praying. Everyone who's ever been stranded at sea is praying. They've always prayed. So the odds that this was going to happen, it was almost a statistical certainty that this would happen. So there you go. Okay. Like they say, there's no atheist in a foxhole. There's nobody stranded who thinks they're about to drown in the depths of the sea who does not pray to God. Who's the most famous atheist I can think of off the top of my head? Hawking, Stephen Hawking. No, he's dead. I can't use him anymore. He's no longer an atheist. Jerry Springer. If Jerry Springer were stranded in the middle of the sea and he thought he was going to drown, even he would pray to God. I couldn't think of any famous atheists off the top of my head. I'm feeling like Buzz Aldrin. I'm just getting a little off my game. Maybe all the famous atheists have already made that mass migration to Mars and they're just not in the news anymore.
It's good to pray.
So, it is good to pray. Oh, absolutely. And you know, you shouldn't wait until you think you're about to drown or die to pray. Yeah. You should thank God every day, which we try to do that here at the McBurney compound, at least once a day. Usually multiple times per day I stop and think about how thankful I am that God exists. By the way, for those of you in the audience who think that science and religion somehow conflict, I want you to ponder something for a moment. Okay, put your thinking cap on. The fact that an eternal God exists is the only logical conclusion of a rational mind. No rational mind can conclude otherwise. There must be an eternal being who made all this. It has to be true. Not it might be true. Not it could be true. Not I want you to take a leap of faith. No, it must be true. Because if there ever were nothing, there would only be nothing. None of this could have ever happened if there were not an eternal being capable of making all of this. There is no other logical option besides a creator God who is eternal. Any other thought process, any other idea, any other theory is not rational. And it will cause you eventually to crack up and lose your mind. So be rational, be reasonable, and realize there is no other choice. There has to be an eternal living God. And the good news is, He wants to be your friend. View. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Yes, and you're welcome for that logic exercise that I just to help you better comprehend reality. If we all had a better grip on reality, the world would be a much better place. And we wouldn't need, well, we wouldn't read stories like I'm about to read from the Culture File. 71-year-old, what is this pervert's name? Van Wagenen. Sterling Van Wagenen, I'm sorry. Sterling Van Wagenen is 71 years old, and he was the producer of the 1985 film The Trip to Bountiful. Do you remember that, he asked? He's extremely attractive.
Never even heard of it,
eh? It was a Robert Redford film. And it led to the founding of the Utah Film Festival, which eventually became the Sundance Film Festival. So we go to American Fork, Utah, and we find out the AP is reporting that the filmmaker Sterling Van Wagenen, who co-founded the Sundance Film Festival, has pleaded guilty to sexual abuse of a child. Yes. So he pled to inappropriately touching a young girl on two occasions, and two only, sometime between 2013 and 2015. So we know why he pleaded, right? We know why he has pleaded, because they had a lot more stuff on him. A lot more. And so he pleaded to these. They made a deal with him, right? Anyway, so let's see, he was 70. He's 71 years old now. 2013 to 2015 is when he allegedly, he is pleading guilty, but we still say allegedly, when he allegedly abused a young girl. So he was a mere 67 years old when this particular incident occurred. And, you know, at 67, you're young, and sometimes you do think crazy things. So I'm sure nothing like this ever happened before with this guy. Or since, no way. All right. Anyway, this ain't your mother's grandfather, as they say, right? I mean, I hope this is not your mother's grandfather. Wow. So, folks, the people who we've let entertain us and our children, and when I say us and our children, I don't mean me, because I don't watch the movies. What was the big movie that just came out? The cartoon movie. The Avengers movie. A pile of perverts put that movie together, and you people dragging your kids out to see this garbage. Anyway, all right, let me get back to the point I was trying to make. The people we have let entertain us and our children for generations are a bunch of degenerates and molesters and queers and freaks and perverts. And that's all I want to say about that. And what evidence do I have? Okay, how about the founder of the Sundance Film Festival is a child molester? That's Exhibit A. And then there's about 1,000 others that have come out in the last 5 years, if you've been paying attention. Virtually the entire upper echelon of Hollywood is a bunch of creep molester freaks. And they're raising your children, for crying out loud. Get your children out of the movie theaters. How about that? I know, get them out of the public schools, but get them out of the movie theaters. Get them off Netflix. 13 Reasons Why Some Girl Kills Herself. They make a romantic drama out of a girl killing herself. That should be criminal, for crying out loud. All right. The Sundance Film Festival is a criminal offense every year. Half the people there should be arrested. In fact, the police should just stake out American Fork right before, and they could arrest probably 5% of the child molesters in the country. Could all be rounded up in one session. All right. Meanwhile, we go to the Culture File, where we're going to talk about Zoe Saldana. He asked, his extremely attractive. Never heard of her? She is a star of the Guardians of the Galaxy series, which I think we might have missed the last one, unfortunately. So she has, let's see, this is Us Magazine reports that Zoe Saldana takes steps to keep her home a gender-neutral environment for her three sons. So do they realize they just called her three children sons after saying that she had a gender-neutral environment? Do they even realize what they just did? No, they don't. Because this is mental craziness. This is insanity. And if you're trying to write anything intelligible, you can't be gender neutral, for crying out loud. So she has two twin sons, Cy and Bowie, and she has a two-year-old named Zen. Oh, good luck to those kids. Oh, boy. She's the star of the Guardians of the Galaxy. She says, I'm always going to be, like, honest, and that is always, like, the best way to welcome a healthy and, like, truthful discourse, especially around parenthood. That's what she said. It's unintelligible. It doesn't really mean anything, but that's what she said. She says about her home life. She says, we have a very gender-neutral environment where my husband participates in a lot of tasks that were normally given to women and vice versa, the dancer said. Us magazine. A dancer? What is a dancer? What is that? Does anyone make their living dancing? I mean, what do you mean, the dancer? So that actually means a stripper, because the only way you make a living dancing is if you're also stripping. So they should have said the stripper said that, but they didn't. They called her a dancer. She says, we're sort of a very gender fluid household, sort of very gender neutral. So I don't really understand adjectives and adverbs. So we're sort of very gender fluid. We're sort of a very gender fluid household. I think it's important to raise boys in that environment and girls as well. Okay. She married her husband. And when they got married, he took her last name because they think that's cute. He didn't want me to, like, give up my name just because that's the norm. Like, you know. All right. And then she goes on to promote her oatmeal milk that she's selling to other brain-dead people. All right. No, I'm sure oat milk is fine. In fact, the one thing that doesn't offend me about this article is that at the end, she's hawking oat milk. I mean, that's the least offensive thing I've heard. Oat milk. All right. Gender neutral. Okay. I wonder why she gave all of her sons a boy's name. Well, I guess Zen is not a boy's name. That Zen's going to have problems. By the time Zen is 15, his mother's probably going to be institutionalized. Who's going to take care of Zen?
Man. Zen is not a girl's name.
No, Zen is not a name.
No, it is. Boyish.
It is more boyish, eh? I thought Zen was a state of higher consciousness that you achieve in Buddhism. Yeah?
It is, but
all right.
Anyway, it's a boy's name.
All right. It's a boy's name, so they named all their kids with boys' names, but we're sort of like very gender fluid. All right. Meanwhile, from our Northern Bureau, we get a story. Reason number 1,193 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The Rockland Unified School District in California has approved a new school curriculum that includes the new K through 5 history and social studies curriculum. That is kindergarten through 5th grade. Parents are in opposition to it, and they say these students are too young to learn about historical figures identified as what? Heroic? Inspirational? No! Gay or lesbian, of course. Gay or lesbian. All the heroes are being removed, and they're being replaced with perverts. And some parents have some opposition, yes. Supporters of the curriculum. So they had a big meeting, see? They had a big school board meeting, and the supporters of the curriculum wore yellow. Okay? And then both sides cheered their speakers, and there were emotional speeches from both sides. Why did the supporters of the curriculum wear yellow? I don't know. Did they don't say? Maybe they're in solidarity with the yellow jackets over there in France. Because if you've noticed, the people who push the lesbian and the trannies and the homos, they're all socialists. Have you noticed that? Isn't it odd that they all have that in common? That they're either socialists or communists, the ones who are all for the faggotry and the queering of America and all that? Anyway, California's Fair Education Act includes a curriculum more inclusive of underrepresented communities, including people with disabilities, various religious backgrounds, and lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgenders. How come the homos and the deviants get four categories? You got disabilities, you got people of varying religions. They don't break out the religions. How come they don't say Jews and Christians and Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus? Oh, yeah, Christians are not underrepresented. I forgot about that. Where the problem, according to the yellow jackets and the trannies and the freaks who've taken over the government schools there in Rockland, California. The Fair Education Act is often met with debate when implemented at the school district level. Why? Because of the homos. They're putting propaganda in front of kindergartners that homos are good. And some parents, some of them that were opposed, threatened to hold a sit-out and not send their children to school on Friday.
Friday?
That's pretty dedicated. So, hey, I'm going to keep my kid out on Friday. How about that? That'll teach you a lesson. And then Monday, he's going to go, I know you're going to brainwash him with all the queer stuff on Monday, but, you know, Friday we're going to make our point. Meanwhile, from the culture file, another Northern California public school district may remove a mural of George Washington from the halls of George Washington High School. The school is called George Washington High School. That's traumatizing to people. They say that the mural is offensive and demeaning to Native Americans and African Americans. Yes. A working group. These people don't work. They administer in a public school. People who have real jobs work. People who contribute to society work. No, they don't work, but they have working groups. And they have a working group that has determined that the mural traumatizes students and community members. Yes. Now, by the way, what these morons here at the high school don't realize is that the mural was painted in 1936 by Viktor Arnotov, a communist who hated America. And he painted the 13 panels that he called the Life of Washington. He painted the mural specifically to make Washington look bad, that he killed Indians and held slaves. It's all there in the mural if you look at it. This guy was a communist. He painted the mural as part of a Works Progress Administration project undertaken during the New Deal under Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So even the leftist maniacal rantings of a communist artist offend all the woke people at the school there in Northern California. They're so woke they can't even tolerate communist criticism of the founding of America because it has a picture of George Washington and he's a white male, and that traumatizes people. So they don't even know what it means. Do they even realize that what the mural actually means? They don't even realize. They're probably not capable of comprehending the meaning of the mural, not capable of comprehending, yet they are in charge of a school district. They are in charge of educating children, and they are, at the very least, uneducated. Godless, moronic heathens. Godlessness will make you a fool and stupid and a moron and unable to comprehend, at the very least. And then at the very worst, it will make you a creepy, evil pervert, like we find here in Minnesota. Reason number 1,194 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. The Minnesota House has voted in favor of the Minnesota House Education Omnibus Bill. Yes. Now, it was opposed by the Minnesota Child Protection League, and they tried to warn parents and stakeholders to call their legislators. Why? Because I don't know why. Why do you think calling your legislators at this late date is going to help in any way? The Minnesota Child Protection League, instead of calling parents and saying, call your legislator, they're about to pass comprehensive sex education, including all kinds of homo... I mean, there's stuff in this story that I can't even say on the air that are going to be viewed by fourth graders. Planned Parenthood is supplying parts of the curriculum. Yes! And meanwhile, the hapless Minnesota Child Protection League, these poor people, this is how sad our side is. They say we need parents to get involved. Let your legislators know how you feel. Call the school board. No, it's too late for all that. Minnesota Child Protection League, I mean, I appreciate the fact that you think you understand how to protect children, but how do you protect children from psychotic, sociopathic maniacs hell-bent on molesting them and destroying their souls? How do you protect them from that? You get them out of that situation. That's all. You don't call your legislature. You don't call the school board. You don't go down and give an impassioned speech to the governing officials at the school. No, that's all way too late for that. We should have done that 100 years ago. We should have just stood up and said, you know, we don't want the government educating our kids. That's all. That's what we should have done. That's what we could have done. I suppose that's what my grandparents should have done. But anyway, well, I did mine. I did my part. I stood up and I took my kids out of the schools. Actually, I never put them in, which makes it a lot easier to take them out, by the way. If you never put them in, it makes it a lot easier. All right, that's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at RealScienceRadio.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.